Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So I'm back from 5 days off, and I've got just four words. I could say these four words and then just shut the show down for another couple of weeks, because nothing sums up anything better than the following four words.
What it do, baby?
You know who belong, who that voice belongs to, don't you? Let me play it for you one more time.
What it do, baby?
That voice belongs to the guy who was running the association. I'll tell you what it do, baby.
What it do, baby?
I'll tell you what it do. The Clippers. The LA Clippers did the damn thing. They did absolutely everything. That was a holy bleep moment on Friday night in a Saturday morning when the news broke that Kawhi was signing with the Clippers. An absolutely huge, franchise-altering, league-changing move. The LA Clippers. The team that nobody ever wanted to sign with. The team that nobody ever wanted anything to do with. Just landed the guy that everybody wanted. And they ripped him from Toronto, where he had just won a championship. And they kept him away from the Lakers, where he would have been part of an absolutely legendary Big Three. They did this. The LA Clippers did this. And don't make this about what the Raptors and the Lakers didn't do. Geoff and the rest of you, I will get to that later on. Instead, make this about what the Clippers did do, because it's absolutely stunning. It's jaw-dropping. And as big as it is, I'm not even sure that people are making a big enough deal out of it. It's one of the most amazing things ever, literally. And that's not me bashing the Clippers and their current organization. This is me hyping them and pointing out how far they've come. That's me hyping Steve Ballmer for what he's done since he took that team over. Remember back when I had Ballmer on my Showtime show, and I asked what Clipper Nation could expect of him? Maybe you didn't see that then. Roll it right now.
What is the message to Clipper Nation? What do you expect from the fans? What can they expect to see from you?
We're coming, baby. We're focused. We're committed. We're coming. We've got one of the most outstanding teams with one of the most outstanding coaches. We're going to support them, starting with me and throughout the fan base, the best we can. And we're going to just get after it totally, 100, 200, 600%. Boom!
Ballmer, 100, 200, 600%, baby, boom! They might have laughed then, but my man was focused. And he was committed. And he was locked in. 100, 200, 600%. Boom! Landing Kawhi. Boom!
600%. Boom!
Like, you might want to laugh at Ballmer when he's losing it on the sideline at games. But are you going to tell me that that doesn't matter? This guy wants to win. And he's willing to do anything and everything necessary to win. You want to laugh at some of his legendary moments when he's on the mic and he's yelling and he's dancing and he's losing his bleep? You go right ahead. My man is not that far away, though, from doing that at an NBA championship parade. Yeah, I said it. This could be coming to a parade through downtown Los Angeles.
Come on! Get up! Get up! Come on!
And it's not just Ballmer. It starts with him, but it's not just him. It's Doc Rivers. It's Lawrence Frank. It's Michael Winger. It's Lee Jenkins. It's Jerry freaking West. Like, landing Kawhi is not a fluke. It's not some salary cap accident. And they were the only team left standing. They were on Kawhi's case all year long. They had a plan. They were working that plan every damn day. And they were going up against the team where Kawhi had just won a title. And against their own big brother. And little brother just hospital jobbed. Big brother. Hell, 10 years ago, they won 19 games, and they weren't trying to tank. They were just being the Clippers. That's what they did, baby.
What it do, baby?
And then they signed Kawhi Leonard, the most sought-after free agent, the guy who had just led the Raptors, the freaking Toronto Raptors, to the NBA title, and was named Finals MVP for a second time. That the Clippers got this guy really is unreal. It really is. Especially since every talking head and dope in the world had him going to the Lakers or maybe staying with Toronto. So yes, him going to the Clippers is unreal. And you know what's even more unreal? You know what's even better than getting Kawhi? getting Kawhi and Paul George. And that's exactly what they did, thanks to a monster trade with the Thunder. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are going to be playing for the Clippers. I said Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are going to be playing for the Clippers. And if it feels like I'm repeating myself, it's because I am. Because on some level, it still seems unreal. On some level, I'm still having a hard time buying it. Now, let's not get jaded here. Let's not let the fact that news breaks, the internet shatters, and then it's rebuilt in a matter of hours rob us of the significance of this. The Clippers just added not one, but two MVP candidates. Yes, Paul George is coming off a pair of shoulder surgeries, but when he's healthy, he is one of the best two-way players in the league. And the only reason he's not the best two-way player in the league is because Kawhi, the guy who recruited him, is the best two-way player in the league. And now they're on the same team, and they're joining Pat Beverly. You think that trio is going to play some nasty defense and cause some headaches? Hell yes, they are. Then you add Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Landry Shamet, Mo Harkless. They effectively took a team that gave Golden State all they could handle in the first round last year, and then they added two MVP candidates. And not just two MVP candidates, but two MVP candidates who appear to be perfect fits for the team's mentality and the attitude and for each other. I'm looking at that roster, and I'm looking at what they can do next year. And now six more words come to mind. Turn up, love you guys, awesome.
Turn up, love you guys, awesome.
Look, nothing's guaranteed, and there will be bumps in the road, and all it takes is one injury to jack this entire thing up. But this Clippers team is damn good. Here's something I've never said before on this show. Did the Clippers just become the NBA title favorites? Again, the question, did the Clippers just become the NBA title favorites? Not only have I never asked that before, but the answer has never been yes until right now. And when the question is, did the Clippers just become NBA title favorites? And the answer is yes, then there's only one other question that needs to be asked. What it do, baby?
What it do, baby?
A very busy man. Chris Haynes is my guest. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
Bro, man, glad to be here, man. Glad to be back. And most importantly, glad that Kawhi chase is all over with, man.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Take me back to Friday night. Where were you on Friday night? What was your night like?
I actually had just left Summer League. I was in bed resting. I think it was around 10-something. It was like 10:40. Then I got a text saying, L.A. Clippers. And so I responded back. I'm like, Kawhi's going to Clippers? They were like, yes. I'm like, okay, I'm good to go. Go now. That was it. That's how I got the I was surprised and shocked. That's why, you know, this is a trusted source of, you know, somebody close to, you know, Kawhi's camp. So when I got that word, I was a little, you know, I just wanted to be sure. You know, I just wanted to be sure because, you know, we didn't hear much about the Clippers all week. It was pretty much Lakers or Raptors. So I had to go have a little back and forth exchange of something, you know, I usually don't do, you know, with one of my trusted, real reliable sources. Because, you know, just had to make sure, you know, when there's the Clippers, I just knew it was going to be a bombshell once I tweeted that info out. But once that happened, man, Jim, you know, that happened at 10. I probably didn't go to sleep till 5 that morning because, you know, things just started happening from there. And, you know, Paul George news came out right after that. So that was one of the most hectic free agency chases in a while because you had so many people saying other things. You had fake bloggers getting on, saying things. Everything that everybody was saying, and the teams that everybody was pointing to, nobody said the Clippers. So that was a crazy hectic night.
Listen, is there something that's interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, grief, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. And you can now get help at your own time and your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. And if for whatever reason you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. Best of all, it is a truly affordable option. And if you listen to this podcast, you can get 10% off your first month with the discount code ROME. So why not get started right now? Go to BetterHelp.com/Rome. Simply fill out the questionnaire. That'll help them assess your needs and then get matched up with a counselor that you will love. BetterHelp.com/Rome. That's BetterHelp.com/Rome. Chris Haynes joining us. It was a crazy night, and the announcement is so stunning. Chris, how do you explain that? The story that everybody was all over. I mean, everybody was on that story, yet somehow nothing leaked out from the Clipper standpoint. How do you explain in this day and age that someone was able to keep that story so quiet and leak-free for so long?
I think this is what happens. Just give a little background. So when, you know, at the later tenure of, you know, San Antonio Spurs, when Kawhi was there, one thing they did not like was reports surfacing and getting out. They believe it came from the Spurs about how the team was distraught, disappointed with the way Kawhi was handling his rehabilitation from his thigh bruise, and questioning if he was hurt or not, and then reports getting out that, you know, the team was disappointed, had a meeting. You know, they did not like that. And so going into this free agency process, one of the main focal points of Kawhi was the trust factor. You know, can he trust the organization? And that's why, you know, I have to give credit to the Toronto Raptors for what they did this year. Because he had to build trust with the medical staff, with the front office. You didn't see many things leaking out from the Raptors. And so that was a point of emphasis. They did not want, going into this free agency process, they did not want this process to be a play-by-play type of situation as far as what he's doing throughout this free agency process. And teams knew, they were aware that if aspects of these meetings or aspects of dialogue, you know, that was taking place during these meetings, these dinners, they knew if it got out, then their chances of getting him would diminish. And so that's why it was so kept secret. I got a story, you know, it pertains to the Clippers. I'm not going to mention this individual, but a high office personnel with the Clippers, let me say this real quick. So Clippers, they were told throughout the organization, do not say anything, do not mention anything about Kawhi, don't say anything to nobody. So then there's this high personnel official with the Clippers. He was talking to his son, about, you know, casual news, and all of a sudden his son asked him about Kawhi. And the guy hung up on the son. And, you know, that's how serious this whole situation was. If you think about all the things that happened during free agency, you know, we heard Magic Johnson come out and told the media basically how his conversation went with Kawhi, what was said. And then, you know, Kawhi, it was like the OJ type chase pursuit when Kawhi was in Toronto. Those things didn't play well. But nothing came from the Clippers. Chris, and we see the end of the result.
Chris Haynes, my guest. Chris, go back to what you said about Magic Johnson. So laying it out like that and knowing what we know about Kawhi and his need for secrecy, how do you think Kawhi and his camp reacted to the stuff from Magic about meeting with him?
I don't think they liked it. I think they understand that Magic's Magic, but he's also not a part of the organization anymore. But it just didn't come off well. It didn't come off well. And, everybody knew, all the teams knew, like, if you're going to have an opportunity of really landing this guy, you know, the process had to be kept under wraps. It had to be. And I'm not saying that was a game changer or that was the reason he didn't go to Lakers, because that wasn't the case. But it didn't help. I'll just leave it at that.
We're talking to Chris Haynes. All right, so whenever you had a star to a team, there's supposed to be this adjustment period or process. Didn't seem, Chris, to be an issue in Toronto with Kawhi. How do you think Doc Rivers and the Clippers go about working Leonard and Paul George into this team?
I think it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period. I do, because this team already, you know, they're a well-oiled team, have continuity of success, and they're bringing back the bulk of their squad. So I think it'll be a little bit of a learning curve, but I think they're going to be top two teams in the whole league, maybe even be number one. I think they're just so talented. I think they're so coached. I think they're one of the deepest teams in the NBA right now. I don't think there will be much of a problem in these guys integrating themselves and figuring it out. And you add in, you know, Kawhi, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, have potential to be one of the most ferocious defensive threesomes, you know, we've seen in a while. It's going to be crazy, Jim. I'm just looking at my, you know, I can't wait till the NBA schedule gets out, because, you know, I might have to get a condo in L.A., Jim. It's going to be like, it's never been like that, really. I know you've been in L.A. for a while, Jim. It's never been
never.
Like that, really.
So
I'm looking forward to seeing how all this is going to take place. I'm looking forward to seeing how the media contingent is going to try to divvy up their assignments. And this is going to be crazy. It's really going to be a battle of who owns L.A., the Lakers and Clips.
Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so to that point, before you go, now, if you had told Laker fans, Chris, a couple of months back, that they would have LeBron and Anthony Davis going into the season, they would have taken that. They would have been pumped. But after being part of the Leonard chase and missing out, a lot of Laker fans are going to be disappointed. How do you like the Lakers roster right now?
I think, you know, with them losing out on Kawhi, obviously, you know, they're going to plan B and plan C. And it's filling out fine. And obviously, I understand why there's a kind of a dip off in enthusiasm coming from the Lakers, you know, because I think most people felt like, okay, once they got LeBron and AD, okay, well, convincing anybody else to come here is easy. And that wasn't the case. You know, Kawhi is just a different cat. But, you know, their roster is shaping out. I like, you know, if somebody was asking, you know, to compare the Lakers roster top to bottom to the Clippers, I think the Clippers got them. But I think the Lakers are going to be right there, man. You don't necessarily need three stars. You know, you need two good players. They have two superstars, and then you need a great supporting cast. And I think if those guys can play their role, Lakers are going to be right there. Look at what Toronto did, man. It was you could say two stars, Kawhi and Pascal. You know, Kyle Lowry kind of took a step back. That's all you really need, Jim. So, Lakers are in a good situation, man. They got LeBron and AD, so they can't be too disappointed.
Hey, Chris, one thought. The Clippers did exactly what they had to do, and I totally support it, but if they were unable to get Paul George and they couldn't get that second star that Kawhi allegedly needed, what do you think Kawhi would have done? Where would he have ended up?
That's a good question. I'm gonna say I don't know, but my guess would be I think he would probably have still gone to the Clippers probably. That would be my guess, Jim. You know, he loved Toronto. You remember, like, this is the first time he's gotten to pick his destination since college. You know, he was drafted into the Spurs. He was traded to Toronto. He's not a cold weather person. He doesn't like the cold. You know, I reported that, you know, he didn't want to go to Toronto when I broke the trade last year. And so, I think it would have been the Clippers. He's not into joining super teams and doing things of that nature, even though he listened to those guys' pitch and, you know, out of respect and, you know, gave it some thought. But I still think it would be hard for me to believe that he wouldn't have still picked the Clippers if they couldn't guarantee a second star.
He's the man who had that story, a senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports, the host of the Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. My man, I would say take some time off. I know you won't, but take some time off or don't. Great to have you back, man. Thanks so much, Chris. Appreciate you.
Take care, Jim.
All right, so if it wasn't for KL and PG going to the Clippers, then the most stunning result from the weekend probably would have been what went down at UFC 239 Saturday night. And no, I'm not talking about John Jones being taken to the limit or Amanda Nunes establishing herself as an absolute legend. What I'm talking about is Jorge Masvidal and Ben Askren. Now, in case you didn't know this going into that fight, Masvidal and Askren do not like each other. Askren has got a habit of getting under the skin of his opponents. And Masvidal was no different. Quote, "I just don't like the dude. He's a corny idiot. He meets people and he's trying to come up with jokes about them right away and see if he's the alpha or whatever. I don't do that. If I just met you, I don't bleep with you. I give you your space. Don't bleep with me because maybe something might happen. I just don't like that dude, man." End of quote. Now, the thing is, Askren was undefeated in MMA. Not only had nobody beaten him, but there was a school of thought that nobody could beat him. And when they stepped into the cage, the talking continued right up until the start of the fight. Roll it.
And these guys just flapping gums at each other. Any chance they get. The fight clock is brought to you by Mojo.
Holy crap. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen that and I still can't get over it. Masvidal went running across the cage and he dropped Askren, who had been unbeaten, with a knee in under 5 seconds. Another reason why I love MMA. I've said this a million times. I'll say it again right now. Everybody gets beat. Everybody gets beat. And he ran right across the cage, dropped him with a knee in under 5 seconds, then landed a couple of punches on Askren while he was on the canvas before the refs or ref could separate him. Even when the ref ended the fight, Masvidal was still talking junk as Askren was napping it out on the canvas. I always thought that Connor ending Aldo in 13 seconds was the most ridiculous KO of all time. But Masvidal made that time seem like an eternity. I mean, run that back again.
And these guys just flapping gums at each other. Any chance they get. The fight clock is brought to you by Mojo.
I mean, did you hear that? The announcer hadn't even finished the promo for the fight clock, and the fight was already over. Like, and the fight clock is brought to you by... Oh! Alvin, for the people in back, run that back one more time.
Any chance they get. The fight clock is brought to you by Mojo.
And the thing about that is, that was not a fluke. That was not lucky. That was something Masvidal had locked and loaded. He was going to break that out to start the fight. And he had a bunch of reasons for doing it. But none better than his response in the cage when Joe Rogan asked him about it. Let's join that interview midway. Masvidal explained his thinking on starting the fight the way he did.
Why the flying knee?
Because he's a bum.
Why the flying knee? Because he's a bum.
Because he's a bum.
Damn, that's good. That's good because that's actual bum smack in the octagon. And yes, I will allow that. As Askren himself might say, boom, roasted. But no, that does not give you losers license to come in here with your tired zingers about how Ben Askren uses shrimp as a Bluetooth. Do not make this about you.
Because he's a bum.
You have nothing to do with this. Keep it about Masvidal. And show some respect for the fact that he says, I'm not the best at cutting promos. Then he starts to walk off. Then he comes back to say, you guys are welcome for ending that dude. It's just outstanding. There's even more where that came from.
He's so predictable, man. He's a scrub. But a part of me just wanted to throw it out there so he knew, like, if you do shoot like an idiot, like you only know how to, your head's going to get clipped. And that would put the brakes on him and then I'd beat him up for 14 minutes and 30 seconds and execute him. Or, you know, he took the bait. You know, I put my hands behind my back. He probably thought we were going to fucking patty kick it up or something. I don't know. But he walked right into it, you know?
Oops. Wow, Alvy. Anyway, what's popping Twitter? Rest or rust, Alvin DeLauro. To recap, according to Masvidal, Askren is a bum. a scrub, an idiot, and he walked right into that hospital job. Oh, and you're welcome. And he wasn't done with Askren when the fight was over. He was still landing haymakers at the presser afterwards.
I saw some criticism. People say the punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Why were they necessary?
What do you mean, why were they not necessary?
Because he was already knocked out at that point.
But the referee hadn't pulled me off. And my job is to hit somebody till the referee pulls me off. So to those people, I would say maybe don't watch him and maybe go back to soccer.
I saw some other criticisms, perhaps, of your celebration afterwards. Any regrets at the celebration or your behavior in the cage afterwards?
Man, there's not too many people that I've disliked. I have over 50 pro fights, and he's one of them, you know. He talked about my manhood, talked about my culture, my ethnicity. Where do we draw? Why do certain people get to do stuff? You online, so you could do anything. Everything is cool before a fight. You're allowed to do and say whatever you want. Like other fighters are not doing, talking about people's religions, wife, even kids. That's cool. But after a fight, I'm not allowed to showboat and rub it in your face. So you and guys like you could see it and be like, maybe I don't talk so much shit, because when I cross one of these real motherfuckers, they're going to make me pay for it, man. They're going to embarrass the shit out of me. And it's not over for Ben either. He still has to deal with me. If I see him at Whole Foods, I'm going to still slap that dude up because I don't like him.
Man, this dude, that is cold-blooded. This is not a dude you want to cross. That was one of the most legendary nights in UFC history. A five-second knockout of an undefeated fighter and then an absolutely legendary presser afterwards. There's so many great moments in that. Like, my job is to hit someone until the referee pulls me off. If you have an issue with that, go watch soccer. Like, I'm not sure what's more lethal, the flying knee to the head or the fire that he was spitting afterwards. And there is still more. He actually seemed disappointed that it ended as quickly as it did.
My whole vision of this, if you could get inside my head and replay my thoughts, were me beating his ass for 14 minutes and then putting him out like that. I really wanted to hurt him for as long as I could, as much as I could, destroy his kneecaps, bust his ribs, make him piss blood, and then send him home packing. But, you know, I think in a way he got off easy.
Man, I have never seen a presser like that after a knockout like that. It's summer, and the only thing more annoying than having to wait out the long days of summer until your favorite sports start up again are flies and other insects invading your home. Let me tell you something. I know from experience. I was in Wisconsin last week. I've never seen so many bugs. This is why I'm so grateful that I've got pals over at Dynatrap. Dynatrap is the leading manufacturer of outdoor mosquito and insect traps. Now they've come up with a solution for indoor pests. The Dynatrap Flylight. The Dynatrap Flylight works day and night to attract and trap flies, fruit flies, mosquitoes, other annoying insects. I've got to say, this thing works. I know it. I have one. It works beautifully. So forget those disgusting fly strips. The Dynatrap Flylight looks like a subtle nightlight, and it plugs into any indoor outlet. I'll say it again. I've got one. It works. Get yours right now at Dynatrap.com. That's D-Y-N-A-T-R-A. Get yours at Dynatrap.com. That's D-Y-N-A-T-R-A-P.com. Enter the promo code ROME and get 15% off any of their products. Dynatrap, the safe, silent, and simple solution to household insect control. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I loved your pictures from the lake in Wisconsin. Awesome.
My man. Thanks for saying that, Kevin. That was a lot of fun. I appreciate you saying it, too. All right, so you've covered a lot of fights for more than three decades, and probably tough to pinpoint one evening, but have you ever been a part of a night like Saturday night at UFC 239?
It was pretty remarkable, I'll say that, because of not just the amount of knockouts, but how violent those knockouts were. It started on the preliminary card when Song Yadong, a prospect the UFC is very high on, scored a knockout with one punch, and you're going, okay, this is a good way to get the preliminaries kicked off. And the main card was just incredible with three in a row. Jan Błachowicz broke Luke Rockhold's jaw with a left hook, ended that fight with one punch. Then you had the incredible knee by Jorge Masvidal setting a record, and then the head kick by Amanda Nunes. That was just an amazing, amazing event.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. It was an amazing event. And before I get your thoughts further on the event, let me just go back to one thing. You had a really, really good tweet on Saturday night that started with, quote, "My first major fight that I covered was Larry Holmes against Ronaldo Mr. Snipes for the heavyweight title," end quote. Take me back. What do you remember about that night?
That was a night where Larry Holmes was almost beaten and almost lost the heavyweight championship. He got decked in the fight, and Snipes was just a guy, was not considered a threat to Larry Holmes. Holmes had proven at that point that he was a worthy successor to Muhammad Ali, and he got dropped in the fight and really had a rally. And it kind of was a precursor to what his career would be like. Larry had gotten dropped later by a number of fighters, Ernie Shavers notably, and some other guys. That was kind of the first one where we saw, hey, Larry's a little bit vulnerable, and he had to show his ability to box and come from behind. But it was crazy. My first major event was a world heavyweight title fight.
You know, I remember that, Kevin. I don't know why, but back in the day, I thought that the Mr. Snipes moniker was hilarious. That always struck me as really, really funny. Ronaldo Mr. Snipes. Maybe that's just me. Now, go back to before the Masvidal-Askren fight. What kind of expectations did you have for that matchup?
You know, honestly, I was 4-1 on the main card with my picks. That was the one I had wrong, and I had it so wrong because I picked Askren to win, and I actually turned to the person next to me before the fight, and I said, "You'll see Askren take him down in the first 30 seconds, and he'll be on top of him the entire fight until he beats him with ground and pound." So I completely had that one wrong. I just thought Askren, who's an Olympic wrestler, and he's kind of like Velcro. He just gets around you, and you can't get him off. I thought, boy, that's going to be the end of this very quickly. And instead, Masvidal had other plans. It was just a remarkable plan. And what I thought, Jim, was most amazing about it is that Mike Brown, Masvidal's coach, later after the fight put out video of Masvidal actually training that exact move 2 days before.
I mean, it really is amazing. He did train it, and it's one thing to train it. It's another to execute it the way he did. Have you ever seen a knockout like that before?
The only one that comes close that I can think of was about 2008. Jose Aldo hit Cub Swanson with one, and he kind of got him with both knees, really. He just leapt up into the air and clubbed him. But I thought this one, for the way, how quickly it went, that was fast, too. But the violence of this, and then the punches, you know. So Askren was out immediately from the knee, and Masvidal just came flying in, and he just did not like Askren whatsoever. And before referee Jason Herzog could get in there and protect Askren, Masvidal whacked him with two massive right hands as well. That was different than anything I'd seen before.
Kevin Ioli joining us. So, Kevin, where do you come out on that? I mean, what do you make of the situation? And in your opinion, should Masvidal have not thrown those punches?
Yeah, I think the classy move is to not throw those punches. I mean, you have the guy knocked out. This is a sport. This is not the streets. It's not a street fight. And so you knew you had him out. The fight was over. But, you know, this is the kind of guy, you know, everybody says Masvidal doesn't care. They said that before the fight. And, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he takes everything you say seriously. And Askren talked an awful lot of smack leading up, and he paid the price for it because, you know, Masvidal wasn't going to just let him off the hook. He did exactly, you know, he was within the rules because, as he said at the post-fight press conference, my job is to keep punching until the referee pushes me off. Now, because of how quickly it happened, the referee's on the other side of the cage, and, you know, that's a pretty big cage, and when you have to run over and get in there that quickly, it's difficult to prevent any punches. So, you know, Masvidal was within the rules. I think the sportsmanlike move would have been to not hit him and just kind of walk away and show your disdain for him. But, and he might have had a one-second faster knockout had he done that.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. You know, Kevin, when you had a great video of Masvidal leaving the cage, and he was shouting that Askren is a bum. That was the quote. What did you make of Masvidal's mood right after that fight and then his performance at the press conference?
The press conference was remarkable. I mean, I think, you know, he just never lost that animosity. I mean, you know, he was saying that if I saw him at Whole Foods, that I would go up to him and smack him. And, you know, he just was really fired up by it. The fact that, you know, he got on, for people who didn't see, you know, he got on the canvas, was beating the mat right next to Askren as Askren is out cold. I don't know exactly what reaction he thought he was going to get, but he was doing that. And I just thought that it showed the fire that he has. And he's a guy, because of that fire. You know, maybe not the physically most talented guy, but because of that fire and desire he has, and he cares so much, that he's become one of the must-watch fighters in the UFC.
You know, Kevin, it's going to be speculation, but I'm kind of curious to see where both these guys go after that. I mean, you've covered this game. You've covered combat sports long enough to know that some guys never come back after a knockout like that, either in boxing or MMA. As an example, like Jose Aldo, he hadn't lost for a decade, and then Conor beat him in 13 seconds, and now he's 3-4 in his last 7 fights.
Right.
Askren had not lost in MMA until Saturday night, so how do you think he responds to a knockout like that?
Well, you know, Askren is a former Olympian. He's a competitor. He's lost before, and he's come back. But that being said, I agree with you. I mean, I thought Saturday to a conversation I had with Ben on Tuesday of Fight Week, and he told me he didn't come back because he had retired when he was with the ONE Fighting Championship. And he told me, he says, I didn't come back because I wanted to make money or anything else. I came back because I wanted a chance to prove I'm the best in the world. After that loss, you know, it's going to be pretty difficult for him to make the argument that he's the best in the world. He's got successful businesses. He doesn't need that. You know, maybe that says to him, you know what, it's time for me to go on, run my businesses, and move on with my life. You know, I would not be shocked if he retires, but if I had a bet, I'd say he doesn't want to go out like that, and he would come back with at least one more fight.
We are talking to Kevin Ioli. Kevin, as you point out, Masvidal said, quote, this is not a beef. I just don't like my coworker. You could say, this is not a beef. This is just some idiot I don't like. My job, thank God, and some of you guys are going to be jealous of this, is I get to punch that coworker in the face. I mean, these are the types of things that Masvidal says that are just so amazing. But let me ask you, if that's not a beef, then what is that?
That is the absolute definition of a beef. I mean, and, you know, if you watched all the embedded that the UFC put out and all the stuff on Fight Week, I mean, clearly they had a beef, and Masvidal was showing up everywhere, Askren was, and staring him down, and, you know, there was clearly he had these hard feelings for him, and I think, you know, he's trying to, you know, be funny, because he also said after the fight, he said, you know, I kept punching him because I thought he might get up. And I don't think anybody on God's green earth thought that Askren would move in the next 15 minutes after that. He took that knee to the face. So I think Masvidal was playing to the crowd a little bit there.
Kevin Ioli joining us. All right, now his knockout overshadowed a couple of other huge results on Saturday night. What kind of expectations did you have going into the Amanda Nunes-Holly Holm fight?
You know, I expected Amanda to win the fight, and I expected her to win it impressively. Did I expect her to head kick Holly and knock her out in the first round? No. The one thing about Holly Holm was I knew that she had a good chin. You know, she had been stopped twice in boxing, never in MMA, and she had gone, you know, the entire 5 rounds with Chris Cyborg. She had a good chin, and she knew how to box. So I thought Amanda's going to win the fight, but Holly's going to give her a little bit of difficulty. Holly's in unbelievable physical condition. She moves very well. She has great kicks. And so I thought, you know, it's going to take Amanda a while to land something, and I thought Amanda would pull away down the stretch and win a decision. I just did not see her knocking off, kicking Holly in the head like she did in doing it. But, I mean, it shows the growth of Amanda Nunes, because she watched film of Holly. She figured out a pattern there, and she picked the perfect time during the fight to throw that kick.
So, Kevin, it's amazing you and I can get this far into a conversation on a Monday after a John Jones fight, and we still haven't talked about John Jones, especially after a John Jones fight that went the distance and resulted in a split decision. So before you go, what do you make of that fight, and where is Jones as a fighter right now?
You know, I think Jones won the fight. I had it 3-2. You know, I understand people who thought Santos won, but you know, when you really watch the fight, what was he landing? He didn't land a lot of punches, and so, you know, I think the expectations for Jones are so high, they're over the top, because he's been so dominant. And Santos, hey, a year ago was knocked out at middleweight in the first round, so I think that is contributes a little bit, because everybody's thinking Santos is going to get destroyed, and now when he's coming on and fighting a good fight and being competitive, you know, people are surprised, and so they kind of naturally go toward him. I think John is still an elite fighter. I think it's going to be interesting whether he decides to go to heavyweight. The one thing he said at the post-fight press conference, Jim, that, you know, kind of raised some eyebrows, is he said, yes, I'll fight the winner of DC and Stipe, but then he said, light heavyweight is where I think I belong. The heavyweights hit way harder, and he goes, I have daughters to raise and a brain to take care of, and I'm not so sure I want to do that. And I found that amazing, because you don't normally see top-level athletes express vulnerability the way he did in that quote.
No, I've never heard him say anything like that. I agree with you. Kevin Ioli covers MMA and boxing for Yahoo Sports. As I mentioned, he has won numerous Journalist of the Year awards. Kevin, great to have you back. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. I know we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, my man. I appreciate you.
The vacation topic has been a big one in and around all the content that I've given you today. I do want to talk about the Mets in a minute. This email reads, "Hey, Jim, did you see the splash the Lakers made in free agency? Speaking of Lakers, I saw you spent a lot of time on a Wisco lake. You know, Jim, if you want to spend time on beautiful lakes, you need to just stay right here in California. You see, in Cali, our lakes aren't just massive watering holes for the unwashed that is Wisconsin residents. You don't have to play, quote, Wisconsin roulette every time you accidentally swallow some of the water when you're swimming. Whether it is the Sierras, Tahoe, or Yosemite, you can be sure that what you're swimming in is crisp, clean, healthy water. Regards, California. Unwashed trashy Benny in Wisco bashing a fish to death in front of his kids. War Wisconsin clones nail gunning 2x4s to their cavemen feet to go water skiing. Evan in the Bay. Didn't see any of that, Evan. Yeah, I've spent some time in California lakes. California lakes are great. But let me just say, the Wisconsin lakes, the chain of lakes where I was, Eagle River, which includes Cranberry Lake, Catfish Lake, honestly, they're as good as any lake I've ever seen. The lake life in Wisconsin was amazing. So a lot of you are like, yeah, we know your kid's going to go to Wisconsin, but why do you go to Wisconsin? Why do you vacation in Wisconsin? Why were you there last summer? Why are you there this summer as well? The answer is we have some really close friends that have a house in Eagle River. And they've had that house for a couple of decades. And they've always said, come to Eagle River, come to Eagle River. And I've never really had any urge to go to Eagle River. And so I went last summer. And the lake life in Wisco was amazing. I loved it. Now, it is a little bit different. As an example, there are bugs. Lots of bugs. Big bugs. Huge bugs. Bugs that bite. Millions of bugs. And they all love Van Smack. Everybody does, right? So that is one difference. But these lakes are absolutely amazing. Amazing lakes. Really nice people. Really fat food. Had some pretty good weather, except the 4th of July got rained out. So we did our 4th of July celebration on the 5th of July. There were thunderstorms. But all in all, it was an amazing week. We had a really, really good time. The only downside of going there is I didn't work out once. An entire week without a workout. And just crushing copious amounts of fat. Bumped into an adult beverage or three. And no workouts. Man, it felt good to get one in yesterday. An amazing week. The only problem was, and again, if you follow me on Instagram or you saw this, I did drop my iPhone in Cranberry Lake. And I guess I did deserve that when I tell you what I'm about to tell you. I mean, like, iPhones are like the most expensive things in the world, right? Right now, a high-end iPhone costs more than a computer. I mean, it just does. And I am a iPhone degenerate. I'm a cell phone degenerate. You know this about me. But just getting a high-end iPhone for me, a bag like me is not enough. Nope. Can't carry a high-end iPhone because that's just not good enough. I have to be different. I go online, I find a site overseas that produces custom iPhones. And I'm not talking about you slap a skin on the back of your iPhone. I'm not even talking about you slap a case on your iPhone that costs as much as the iPhone. I'm talking about worse. I'm talking about a custom iPhone, a rebuild, not refurbished, rebuilt iPhone, custom. And not only do they charge you out the ass, and you'd have to be the biggest idiot ever to do it, like me, you wouldn't believe the customs you have to go through to get that phone because it's overseas and the tax that you don't know is coming that does. In short, I have never worked so hard to get my hand on any device. And you've heard me talk about phones over the years. I have never worked so hard to get my hand on any gadget or device in my entire life as this particular phone. And I get it. And I'm parading around proudly and arrogantly with this very different phone that I know nobody has. Literally nobody. And I bring that bad boy to Wisco. And I go down to that dock. And we rented a house. And I go down to that dock. And I sit on the bench at the dock. And I'm having a good old time just looking out at Cranberry Lake. Best day ever. Janet comes down, sits on the bench. I scoot over. In the process of scooting over, I knock said overseas phone into the lake. And I don't know it. And I'm just having a good old time. Nothing but water, nothing but blue sky. I get up, I turn around to pick up the phone, and I think, oh, bleep. Where is the phone? Where is the phone? I check one pocket, I check the other pocket. It's obviously in the lake. And she says, go in and get it. And I am so furious, man. F-bombs are flying. She's like, what's the matter with you? Go in and get it. Go in and get it. So it took me about 3 minutes to get leverage of myself in the situation. And I drop into the lake. Understand, as this emailer pointed out, the water is not necessarily as clear there as it is here. In fact, you can't see anything. It's very dark. It's very murky. I'm on my knees. Luckily, it's shallow, and it couldn't have gone that far, right? It just went behind me. I'm on my knees, feeling around on the floor of Cranberry Lake, looking for the magic phone, the most expensive phone ever. And I'm looking around, and I'm thinking to myself, what do they always say about iPhones? Like, it's a minute or 30 seconds. They're water resistant. They're not waterproof. 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute. In a panic, I can't find this thing. Finally, I fish it out. There it is. I hold this thing up, and I look at it. I'm trying to swipe the water off the face of it, and I'm furiously thumbing out a text to my man, Dave Whalen. Dude, are you getting this? Are you getting this? He's like, yep, I got it. I'm like, oh, hell yes. I dodged a scud. It works. It works. I'm all good. What a relief. And then all of a sudden, the thing just turns pink. It turns pink. It starts to kind of zap out, and then it shut off. And then, like any desperate dude who drops a phone in the water, I'm just praying that that whole bag of rice thing works. Drop that thing in a bag of rice. Oh, by the way, we had to go buy rice. Frantically going into town to find a bag of rice. I mean, literally, it's whacked out a half a day on my vacation, this stupid phone. Into the rice. It stays in the rice. I pull it out of the rice. Try and turn it back on. Same pink lines. Moral of the story, if you do a bag thing, like buy a phone overseas that's way overpriced, it deserves to go in the lake. Dead as bleep. Dead. DOA. Dead on arrival. The phone is dead. Never to be used again. That happened one day. Had a fireworks show, but it got rained out, so we did that on the 5th. What else? Had a couple of omelets like that I've never seen the likes of. Crazy omelets. Like they jammed an entire pig into one omelet. Felt a little light on my feet after that one. Did the Eagle River Parade on the 4th. That was fun. I saw so many Wisconsin clones. So many clones. And the 4th of July in the Midwest was pretty awesome. I mean, a slice of Americana. Everybody was so nice. Everybody was so nice. Everybody. Except that one jerk that found Jake, my son Jake, at an eatery, rolled up on him. This is how small this town is. Rolls up on Jake and says, hey, you're Rome's kid, aren't you? And Jake says, I am, actually. Yes, nice to meet you. This guy goes, is your old man an a-hole in real life like he is on the radio? That was classy. So, like, thousands of extremely nice people and one jerk. What else? What else happened in Wisconsin? Not the easiest place to get to, yo. Not the easiest place to get to, but we did fly through Minneapolis, and I did stop by the Smack Shack once again. Also on Instagram, if you saw that. What else? Anybody else want to share their thoughts on Wisconsin and my spending my vacation there? Hey, that was not the first time, and it probably won't be the last. John Morosi. John, good to have you. How are you?
Jim, I'm outstanding, my friend. A great great week to be an American sports fan. We had our World Cup triumph there yesterday, and then, of course, all the festivities going on in Cleveland this week.
All true, and I'm going to talk about Cleveland in just 1 minute, but every time you've done the show this year, John, we have talked about the Dodgers and what they're doing, so there's no way that we cannot do that again today. They're 60-32 at the All-Star break, and that comes after dropping three straight going into the break. So if you're Dave Roberts, how are you feeling about the first half?
I would feel excellent. Of course, the Dodgers have the best record in baseball right now, Jim. And yes, maybe a bit of a stumble late the last few games before the break, but this team almost has no weakness. I say almost because they're a club that I believe is going to look very seriously at the bullpen market in the coming weeks. Of course, we now have only one trade deadline in baseball, July 31st. That is it. And I would expect them to get the best reliever they can pair with Kenley Jansen. That could be a co-closer, ideally a left-hander, potentially Felipe Vasquez, who is now an All-Star as well this week. I would watch him carefully. Will Smith of the Giants, potentially even a trade between those two great rivals, which by the way, has not happened since 2007, a Dodger-Giant trade. But this team, Jim, you look at the way that they've had the bullpen, I think, at times be a weakness for them in the last two World Series. When you've got a team that's this good, this talented, that's made it to the World Series in back-to-back years, you simply cannot afford for your season to end short of a championship because the bullpen is not deep enough. You know it's a weakness. I expect for that reason Andrew Friedman's going to be very aggressive in addressing that with a trade here in the coming weeks.
John Morosi joining us. All right, you broke that down for me. I don't even need to follow. What about the Astros? They're 57-33. They're talking about adding pitching. Where are they looking, John, and what does that tell you about their motivation to win this year?
Well, Jim, it's really interesting because this is a team that, of course, they've got multiple all-star pitchers right now. Justin Verlander, who's going to start the game, Garrett Cole, and Ryan Pressly, who's really emerged as a great reliever. But Garrett Cole is going to be the preeminent free agent pitcher this winter. And when you look at their rotation, Verlander, Cole, Wade Miley, they have, I believe, a very strong need for a starting pitcher to fill in that third or fourth spot, depending on how high the acquisition ends up being. And it's my belief, Jim, they're going to pursue players they would control beyond the end of this year because you think about Garrett Cole, free agent after this year, Wade Miley, also a free agent, Colin McHugh, a free agent, and they've had some of their young prospects, especially Corbin Martin, who just had Tommy John surgery, Forrest Whitley. They have not really emerged in a way that you would expect. So those names, I believe, that the multi-year control pitchers, Marcus Stroman in Toronto, Matthew Boyd in Detroit, and potentially the Texas native himself, Noah Syndergaard with the Mets. Now, the Mets, as you know, Jim, they're in a bit of a state of disarray right now. I'm not sure if they're almost in the headspace to make a trade like that because there's been so much turmoil there. But if they do decide to go that route, I do think the Mets and Astros would pair up very well on a trade for Noah Syndergaard.
We are talking to John Morosi. That would be really interesting. Now, the Yankees are thought to be interested in pitching as well, John, and the name Madison Baumgartner has come up quite a bit, or at least did back in June. Where do things stand with that right now, and how do you think he would fit New York?
Well, it's a great question, Jim, and I think that there is still some dialogue, some contact between the Giants and the Yankees about the possibility of a Baumgartner trade. I don't get the sense that things are terribly close right now or that they're really gaining momentum at the moment. I actually happen to think, Jim, there's a better chance that Baumgartner goes to a National League club, like potentially the Brewers, maybe the Braves, who I think would have a very good chance to sign him long-term because, of course, he's from North Carolina and would really welcome the chance to be there and pitch close to home. So I think for the Yankees, Jim, he's one of many possibilities. I think Stroman and Boyd are fits there as well, potentially, because they know they've got to replace CC Sabathia after this year as well. So getting someone who you have control of, I think, would have a great deal of appeal. Of course, Madison Baumgartner is just a rental for this year alone. I look most especially, Jim, at the great number of left-handed hitters for the Dodgers, for the Brewers. Those are teams that are very left-handed heavy. And if you're a team, for example, if you are the Brewers, then you know that you have to find a way to get through the Dodgers. It really helps to have that dominant lefty starter if you could possibly have one, because you want to have a lefty to go up against the likes of Bellinger and Muncy and Peterson, all names we're going to see in Cleveland this week. So I think for me, Bumgarner is a better fit in the National League, and it's all about, for me, how a National League team, and the one that's probably the next best club in that league is probably the Braves right now, how can the NL clubs control the Dodgers' powerful left-handed hitters in the month of October? You've got to prepare for that right now in the coming weeks and make that big trade. You have to make an October trade in July here before July 31st.
Right, and given his history against L.A., I'm sure the Dodgers would be happy to see him leave the National League altogether. John Morosi is my guest. Now, John, the All-Star game, as we're talking about, is in Cleveland tomorrow night. The thought had been a few weeks back that Cleveland was going to be a selling club, but they've won six in a row, and they've got the second wild card spot as we speak. How do you think they'll approach the next few weeks?
Well, Jim, it's a great topic around baseball, and so I'm glad you asked about it. I mean, it's been hotly debated for a long time. But as you point out, with the way they've played of late and the fact that you've got three still rebuilding clubs in your division in the American League Central, I believe will help the Indians have a higher record than you might expect, because they'll be able to match up against the likes of the Royals and the White Sox and the Tigers over the last couple months of the season. And that will give them an advantage in relative terms to the AL East clubs, for example, who have to deal with two really good contenders, because you've got three effective contenders. They're all playing each other. And even out West, the Angels have played better of late, the Rangers as well, joining the Astros, and the A's, of course. So that's a very competitive division. And I think in some ways the Indians will benefit from the rebuilding nature of their divisional competition because of the unbalanced schedule. I think right now the most likely scenario, Jim, is that they hold. I don't see them buying aggressively, but I also think that it would be a little odd, I think, for them to trade the likes of Carlos Santana and Brad Hand right now and make those moves at this point in time, given how well they've played. So I think they're a club that's going to hold. Maybe they make a small move around the margins, but I'd be surprised if they did a wholesale moving out of pieces, because they are competitive. And as you point out, if the playoffs began today, they'd be in it. Very hard to be a seller under those circumstances.
John Morosi is joining us. He's all over the festivities in Cleveland for the All-Star game. John, you mentioned the Angels, and of course the league was rocked last week with the news of the passing of Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs. For those who did not know Skaggs, what was he like as a player and as a person?
Well, Jim, he was an amazing light for that organization and for the game as well. I remember a number of years ago I had a chance to talk to him in spring training, and he is one of the unique people who, after talking to him for 10 minutes, you felt as though you'd known him for 10 years. And he just told stories so easily. And speaking with Brad Ausmus, I saw the Angels over the weekend in Houston, and Brad was talking about how he was the one who controlled the clubhouse sound system after a win. He would be the DJ that spun the best music and got everybody in a great mood. So that's why it's so emotional to spend time, as I did around the Angels over the weekend, because they go between the incredible pain of losing a close friend at such a terribly young age, and then they would also want to share with a smile their memories of what an incredible person he was. So there's a remarkably large void right now in the sport, and certainly for the Angels, and I know the thoughts and prayers of the whole sport have been with them and will continue to be, because whenever you talk to a player, whether it's in this clubhouse or those who have gone through similar tragedies in the past, they'll all tell you that, especially in a tight-knit atmosphere of a clubhouse, there is no straight line improvement in terms of the grieving process. It's going to be a process. You're going to have to lean on your counselors and the people around you to help you through it. And I think the first home game back for them, Jim, will be a challenge on Friday in Anaheim, but they've got a whole world of support behind them and some incredible families that are around the players that are helping them through it as well, because it's a very difficult time right now for the Angels, but they're doing a great job, I think, of representing their friend's memory and his passion for life, his spirit for the game, in the way they've played here over the past week.
Well said. John Morosi joining us. I don't think you ever get over something like that. I think you just hope to get beyond it. And then before tomorrow night's game, John, in Cleveland, the All-Star game, the league is going to honor CeCe Sabathia for his contributions to the game and to the community. What has he meant to the game, and how special will that moment be tomorrow night?
It's going to be extraordinary, Jim, and I think that moment, and of course Michael Brantley getting a nice ovation, a huge hand, I'm sure, coming back to Cleveland, will be powerful as well as an All-Star for the American League. But CeCe Sabathia, I always, a couple stories to me stand out. Number one, we talk about the difficulty of going to the big markets and living up to the hype and the expectations when you're a superstar. CC has done that for a decade. And the respect that he garners just in the way that he treats people, the Boys and Girls Club, the time he's given there, how involved he's always been in the community, whether it's back where he grew up in California or in New York and New Jersey where he has lived and worked for a decade, he is revered. Teammates respect him, and opponents respect him. I know from just talking to people in both of those categories, he is one of the most respected people in uniform, out of uniform, anywhere in the game. And you think about his very first year, he goes to the Yankees. They win a World Series back in 09. The year previous to that, when he was a free agent to be, all the expectations, you think about how nowadays you want to make sure you preserve your market value and keep your arm healthy. He was pitching on 3 days rest for about the last 6 weeks of the season in Milwaukee. That earns him so much credit. So just a really respected veteran, always accessible to us, easy with a smile, easy with his support for teammates. You're going to see, I think, as the crowds cheers for CC, of course, being a former Cleveland Indian, you're going to see all of his peers in the major leagues react in the very same way because there are in all the years I've covered the game, Jim, I cannot think of a player who is more widely respected than CC Sabathia.
You know, he is beloved. He is revered. John Morosi, same thing would be said about you, John. You are beloved and revered. You can watch him across MLB Network's programming throughout the season. Plus, MLB Network has live All-Star Game coverage from Cleveland today and tomorrow. John, great to have you back. Thanks for breaking that down. Always good to talk to you.
Jim, my pleasure. Thanks as always for the kind words, my friend. I feel the same way about you. I always love listening to your show, and so it's a great honor anytime I am on it. So all the best to you and your family, and look forward to catching up again soon.
Good night now!